Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. Bob, how you doing today?
I'm good. I'm a little perplexed, like the rest of the Raptors fans out there, but, you know, basically pretty good.
Yeah,
I'm confused, Matt. I'm confused.
Yep. Go.
Just the obvious. Okay, so let's dive in. Let's talk about NBA draft. We've all been psyched for months about, you know, winning the fourth pick in a four-person draft. And then we've been told that the fourth in this four-person draft was Jalen Suggs.
Yes.
The draft went exactly as everyone predicted it would for the first three. And there was some thought, well, you know, the Raptors, if they love Evan Mobley, because he's apparently amazing, they might move up. But that would be the surprise we were looking for, is someone moving up to get Mobley or Green or something. But with everything going the way it was supposed to, landing at four and then taking Scottie Barnes, it was like, oh. Now, I want to point out, this is not a Rafa Arujo situation. It's not Anthony Bennett at the number one.
Yes.
You know, he was ranked as the next player. It's just the idea was that there were tiers. And that as the next player, Barnes was supposed to be a significant drop-off from what Suggs is. And I know how you feel when you, you know, it's after the NFL draft and you run to see what Mel Kiper said about what the Giants have done, and your heart sinks when you see like a B-minus, you know, because they pick some running back or whatever. And so I did my due diligence and checked every draft grade I could find. And the consistent view is this is a gamble. Nobody really gets it. So I'm confused like everybody else.
And yeah, like we all were expecting Jalen Suggs Gonzaga. We were expecting that name. Everyone had it as the number four pick. If you went to Vegas, it was an overwhelming favorite. Scottie Barnes from Florida State going number four. You would have won a lot of money if you gambled on that. The one thing I noticed leading up to the draft was it seemed that it was a draft of top three. Then there was a bit of a drop to Jalen Suggs, who was in his own tier. Then there was another little bit of a drop, which is where Scottie Barnes was. And by the way, Bob, do you think we can go this whole podcast without calling him Harrison Barnes?
No. In fact, I've almost done it a few times.
Yeah, I almost did it. Yeah.
You know, it's not like Harrison Barnes is Michael Jordan, but there it is, right?
Yeah, there it is. It doesn't matter. It's probably going to happen. And that was what was sort of leading up to it. And I think the thing with Suggs is that if you were going to find a negative, it's that the floor was high, but the ceiling wasn't as high as someone like Scottie Barnes. And what this comes down to, and Bobby Webster said they were looking for the player that was going to be the best 3 years from now.
Yes.
Because I think year one, Suggs is going to have better numbers and probably more of an impact with Orlando than what Barnes is going to have with Toronto. It's Toronto's gambling that they made Anunoby and Siakam better shooters than when they were drafted, and that they can do the same thing again with Barnes, who brings so much else to the table.
Masai clearly has a type, mm-hmm. and it's a type that thrives in the NBA. He's right to have it. It's guys who are quick defensively, can shift, can think the game, have long wingspans, and high motors. And when we look at the best players in the league, a lot of them fit this profile.
Yes.
And so Barnes isn't a great shooter, but he's everything else. Now, shooting is the most important skill you can have in basketball. So it's not a small thing to not have at the pro level. When they describe him as a no-level shooter as opposed to a three-level scorer, that's worrisome.
Yep.
But I was thinking back to Kawhi Leonard's scout profile, you know, because he turned into maybe the best two-way player certainly in the game, and one of the greatest of all time. And also yes. Incredibly clutch, right? Incredibly focused, incredibly clutch. And when he came out of the draft, he was 15th, and he was projected as a defensive specialist who could rebound without much of a shot. And that's why he went to 15. But if you could redo that draft and you had number four, would anyone say, you're crazy for taking Leonard here? He's projected to go 11 slots later. No, you would be like, oh my God, we know something nobody else does. And maybe since Leonard, and certainly with Masai's experience with those kinds of players, Pascal, OG. He's like, they have what they need to be great. We can teach them the rest, to your point. So that's a big gamble. But I think Masai also figured out early on, if you don't win some of these gambles, you don't win. So to your point about Suggs, the next 2 or 3 years, it will look like the wrong pick. But if he can develop Barnes, that is, at a reasonable rate, then he goes from being a guy who's quite a useful piece to the kind of guy who can lead a team. And that's, I guess, worth the gamble.
And that's what it is. And by the way, this is certainly more of a gamble because this is pick 4. This is not pick 11, 12, or 13. Right. So it is a bigger gamble. And, you know, Suggs also, and this is not me deciding, okay, we have Barnes, let's rip Suggs, because Suggs was the guy we wanted and he checked all these boxes. But he, like, the one negative about him was he was a streaky shooter, certainly a better shooter than Barnes. No one is saying that, but certainly a bit of a streaky shooter. The best thing, and I was listening to the Ringer podcast this morning, super early. I was doing the morning show today. Bill Simmons and Ryan Russillo. And Russillo brought up a point about Scotty Barnes that I thought was really cool that I wanted to share with you, Bob.
Okay, well, I listened to the same pod, so I might already know it, but most of our listeners probably haven't, so share.
Okay, well, then perfect. Now let's see if you have the same takeaway that I did. You often hear that player X is very versatile defensively and that they can guard 1 through 5. That's great. Now, a lot of times, the reason that player is guarding the small forward, then the center, then the point guard, is just because of multiple switches and things like that. But with Barnes, the difference was they would assign him, you get the point guard tonight, you get the small forward tonight, you get the center tonight, that he was good enough where they would start the game off with him defending, not if it so happens in the flow of a play, you're now guarding the power forward. Hey, we know you can handle it. It's he was so good defensively, they'd be like, nope, we trust you no matter what the size is of the guy in front of you.
I thought of him as a defensive Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson was the first prospect where they said he could play 1 through 5. And I think they really meant offensively back then. But right now with switching, maybe this is becoming a more of a thing. Can you be a defensive 1 through 5? And Barnes is the first guy, to your point, it totally jumped out at me too. He's the first guy I've ever heard someone say, not that he's a movable piece, but that one-on-one, you can stick him on anybody. That's exciting. I think the elephant in the room is trade possibility, and we can get there in just a second. But I do want to add something to one thing that really bummed me out about last night was the cloud that still hangs over Masai.
Yes.
And it was unavoidable on Twitter. People are ripping him. That's silly. He's, you know. He didn't do just one thing, get Kawhi. You
know, yeah.
Like, and even if it was, that's a pretty big thing. But it just is still so unclear what the hell is going on with this guy. Like, we've gone past the draft now. Come on.
Ah, Bob. Josh Lewenberg, and because this makes a point to Masai staying, I'm going to grab onto it. Lewenberg wrote at TSN.ca about this, that this is maybe more of a sign that Masai is staying, because if he was going to go, maybe Bobby Webster and the Raptors go with the safer pick, because Jalen Suggs is the safer pick. But this is the gamble. This is a bit of the swing. This is slightly off the board, whatever analogy you want to use. So why do the Raptors do this unless Masai is, if he's not going to stick around to see what Scotty Barnes looks like?
I also saw reporting last night that Masai was leaning Barnes and Webster was leaning Suggs. So if that was a debate internally, mm-hmm. you would think that if Masai felt he was going or knew he was going, that he would go with Webster because you're handing the keys over to him and they clearly have a good working relationship. I don't think that he would ego up on the way out to say, I'm going to make this pick and then I'm going to leave a week later. So I agree with you, actually. I took last night the fact they went weird as a sign that this is how Masai thinks you got to build a winner.
Yeah.
So that's you make a great point. I hope that's true.
Because
I just wanted Masai to make me feel better with that calming voice of his.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah. He is the warm glass of milk. He's the grilled cheese and tomato soup. He's the blanket that Toronto sports fans need.
Matt, he's the dad I never had. Don't tell my dad.
Oh, shame on you, Robert Mackowitz Sr.
Any other thoughts on the Raptors? Because there's a lot of other basketball stuff to talk about. Or we could just get into possible rosterbation right now. Because taking Barnes and the clear duplication of the Pascal Siakam role has opened the door wide to rampant rosterbation.
Oh, I know. It just it's all over the place. I didn't mean it that way. Phrasing. Onwards and upwards. I'm just going to say right now, Ben Simmons. Nope, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Moving on. So we'll get away from that. To me, it still comes down to, you never know, but it still comes down to Golden State, doesn't it? Like, Pascal Siakam would be perfect. Would be perfect for the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors have drafted a lot of young players in the last 2 years now. A lot of high, top 10, whatever players. It just, like, I have no idea if it can happen in salary cap ramifications, and you got to include Andrew Wiggins and all this other stuff. But if Siakam's going to go on the move, I don't see how it can't be anyone but Golden State.
Okay, so I agree that that's the leading candidate. And there's a lot of attractive options that could come back the Raptors' way.
Yeah.
Sacramento interests me. And I'll tell you why. Because they were in for a deal with the Lakers, with Buddy Hield as bait. And and it didn't happen, obviously. Russ Westbrook went to LA. But Sacramento needs to do something. And they've got a couple nice young guards. De'Aaron Fox, I love, and I don't think they would part with him. But Tyrese Halliburton's really interesting. And is there something you could do with Halliburton and Hield with the Raptors for Siakam? This is me roster baiting, but I played this out in my head and I thought, Tyrese is a point guard, but not really. He's kind of like a glue guy at guard. And I think he and Fred could be pretty interchangeable, like who's running the point and who's playing off ball.
Yeah.
And Hield is just a straight up shooter. Like, he's just a killer. And Halliburton I love. I think Halliburton is going to be an important piece on a good team for a long time. And Hield has, the number one role that the Raptors need right now, which is just shooting. And so what does that team look like? Like, you get rid of Siakam, you plop in Barnes, and all of a sudden Halliburton and Hield are part of your rotation. You still have issues at the five, right? You still have issues at the five, but boy, do you have the building blocks of an interesting, tough team.
I hadn't thought about Sacramento. And I mean, first off, I'm right now in, I know there's no way for me to say this, what it seems like I'm down on Siakam. I think there's still a very bright future for Siakam, but I think I do that deal. And if you can then bring back Ken Birch. And we saw that Ken Birch is not a star, never will be, but he stabilized the center position, which is really all you need if you are the Raptors. It's not a bad deal. If I'm Sacramento, I don't do it. I think because Siakam at 27 feels like he's got to go to that team that is ready to win now. Like, I think Siakam can never be your number one, unless you think De'Aaron Fox can be it. Like, Siakam is at his best if on 15% of the nights, he's your number one, 40% of the nights, he's your number two, and 45% of the nights, if I've done my math right, he's your number three option. That seems like the ideal Siakam.
So I'm going to advocate for this because I think De'Aaron Fox is on the cusp of becoming that guy.
Okay.
And he's had a bad team and a bad organization around him, but he has all the skills. He's going to be scoring in the mid-20s and running an offense at high tempo. And high tempo is where Pascal does best. There's threat there because of the age in 27, but they got to do something. And when they took Davion Mitchell at number 9, that's where I really got to thinking. People were perplexed in the same way they were with the Raptors, which is, it's not that he's a bad player. It's just, is this the right fit? And then you think, okay, well, you bring in Davion Mitchell when you already have two guys who run the point, and he runs the point. Well, unless you think one of those guys is expendable because you're big game fishing, big fish hunting, whatever you call it. I'm going to go with big fish hunting.
Sure.
Yeah, it's like Good Will Hunting, but just a lot, a lot less intelligent. that made me think this is a real possibility. And the thing that's interesting, you make a great point about Ken Birch, because what they really need is just you know, they need to just insert a body there that you can trust in a way you couldn't to Aaron Baines or Alex Len. Because when Barnes develops in 2-3 years down the road, he's going to be the closing center in the same way that Draymond was the closing center in the lineup of death for the Warriors. And that's all exciting. Like, that's all really exciting. There's no superstar there. There's no superstar there. You're kind of gambling that maybe Barnes becomes so good, he becomes the unappreciated superstar, like top 15 to the people who know.
Yeah.
But, so this, look, I just got my eye on this. I got my eye on it because I could see something there. Kings want to do a deal. Nobody wants to do a deal with them. Raptors need to make a deal.
Well, it's, and now it's the waiting game. You know, is it, like, it just feels like, yeah, once that deal happened, it's like, okay, now what happens to Siakam? And maybe nothing. And maybe he's back and he goes back to being an all-star. You know, I don't know if he's ever going to make second team All-NBA again, but he becomes an all-star and you find a way to work all these interchangeable guys. And, you know, there's high basketball IQ all over the floor, and Nick Nurse is a really smart coach, so maybe they make it work. But I'm still going to put a 20-25% chance Siakam has moved. I think it's Golden State, but I like what you did there with the Kings. I like what you threw out there.
I have a kind of a Suggs conspiracy theory.
Sure.
And this is total irresponsible. I guess this is almost like journalistic roster baiting, just totally irresponsible. Yep. But he looked really happy when he didn't go to the Raptors. Like, he jumped up and applauded. Now, I think I think people took that to mean, like, hey, he's supporting this other guy because he's so confident or whatever. Mm-hmm. But apparently Suggs did a pretty mediocre workout for the Raptors, and Barnes did an amazing one.
Oh. You think he tanked it on purpose?
It wouldn't, you know, when you hear stories on draft night about how Kobe's team just basically told New Jersey, we're not going there. Like, why did you take Kerry Kittles and not Kobe when you thought he had the best workout? He said he's not going.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if there was something there. Barnes, everybody talks about him being this incredible culture guy. And frankly, I think they gambled on Pascal, and we don't talk enough in our market about how unhappy Pascal seems to be. You know, he was fined and suspended for insubordination last year, and nobody suggested that whatever he said to Nick Nurse wasn't way out of, you know, acceptable. And last night, Kendrick Perkins, just dropping truth bombs, was sort of like, well, we all know he doesn't like it there, and he doesn't get along with Nick Nurse. You know, he's talking like a player. Maybe we're thinking of Pascal as an asset and not as a guy who just wants to GTFO Toronto.
Yeah, you're right. Like, we do sort of gloss over the problems he had with Nick Nurse. And I think it's because we have such respect in Siakam and such faith in the Raptors that the idea of discord is something we don't think about. But they're an organized sports organization like any others where there's going to be fights, and maybe it's worse than we think.
He hasn't been happy since the bubble. Mm-hmm. He hasn't seemed like himself since the bubble. I have no idea why. None of us do. And that's irresponsible to speculate why somebody seems out of sorts. But clearly he's not the player we fell in love with in the first half of that season and the one we fell in love with during the championship run. He just hasn't been the same guy. There are moments, but on the court,
that's it.
He was defined like Mitch Marner. Like, there was just a certain joy in the way they played. And when that joy isn't there, there's something kind of flat about what they bring. There's a creativity and a zip and a motor and all that stuff. And Pascal hasn't been that guy. And it would be, and maybe God bless the assassin that Messiah is. Maybe he's looking at this and saying, you know, he'll never be great again. And he certainly won't be great here. And I better get rid of him. And it's not a knock against who the guy is or who he could be. It's the way it's trending. Shut her down.
Yeah. By the way, slightly off topic, but to your point about Jalen Suggs maybe tanking the interview, when I was in grade six or seven, my mom thought about sending me and my twin brother Josh to UCC, to Upper Canada College. And the only reason was her sister, my aunt, a couple of their kids went to UCC. And I hated this idea. My school was 5 minutes from where I lived. I didn't want to have to wear a uniform every day. So when I went to take the test, I sat there for the first half and like the aptitude test to see if you qualify for UCC. For the first half, I sat there and I didn't write an answer. And for the second half, I wrote a lot of bad answers. I did not get into UCC.
I love that story, Matt, about how even grade six Matt knew what was the most fun way to move forward.
Yes. And one of the most prestigious private schools in Toronto was an absolute no-go. And I think my parents now would look back and say, thank you. You saved us a lot of money.
That's funny. So when I was in grade six, I went out for University of Toronto schools, which is like one of those kind of brainer schools. It's kind of a feeder system into the U of T. And there was a two-part test. First part was math, and the second part was they gave you a bunch of information and you had to write an essay on it. And it was information, I'll never forget this, about the electric company and how many calls they made and this and that and the other thing. And so for about 25 minutes I wrote, and I thought, this sucks. So I asked for a new bunch of foolscap. And I said, they said, well, it's almost over. You know, do you really want to rewrite this? And I said, yeah, I do. And then I quickly sketched out a story about not the electric company, but a group of assassins that would send electrical currents through phones in order to kill their victims.
Ooh.
I did not get in.
But did you get a three movie deal with Warner Brothers?
I'm on a holding deal with CBS.
Yeah.
So
yeah, fun. Warner Brothers. Yeah.
But if there was ever two anecdotes that would chart the courses of our lives, Matt, you figured that you didn't want to go to UCC, even though it's what everyone expected of you because it just wasn't for Matt.
No.
And then feel comfortable about tanking it versus me, who is like, oh, fuck this. I'm not writing this boring shit. I'm just going to write a story about assassins. Oh, I didn't get in.
That is a good story. By the way, Bob, let me be your lawyer right now. Patent, because someone's going to steal that idea from this podcast and they're going to want to use it and sell it to TBS. I don't think it's going to get as high as Warner Brothers. TBS, they'll take it. By the way, speaking of lawyers, our lawyer, Jeff Pollock, is the sponsor for the Macko and Cos podcast. If you need legal help, whether it's because you've written a kick-ass script and you got to make sure to protect against people that are going to steal it, if you need wills, litigation, states, trust, whatever, our lawyer should be your lawyer, Jeff Pollock, jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G, jeffpollock.com. The number, 416-777-0088, 416-777-0088. Bob, here's one reason if you want to love Scotty Barnes, I found one for you.
Okay.
Scotty Barnes is doing media right now, talking to the Toronto media, and he says he was delayed getting to his press call this morning because there was traffic getting back from the gym. So he was up early, already rising and grinding, and the reason he was late, he was coming from the gym.
So two things, and I do love that. The thing about Suggs is everyone talks about his incredible competitiveness, and that's so attractive in a high draft pick. You have to have it. But Scotty Barnes seems to have that too. I like it when they say, my job is to become the best player in the NBA.
Yeah.
That's great, because if you don't shoot that high, you're going to miss. So, yes, that's very exciting. I love that he was at the gym. He's a grit grinder. Speaking of which, is Kendrick Perkins turning into the O-Dog of basketball?
Oh, 100%. Did you? Yeah. Oh, he's so entertaining and lovable. And he says some ridiculous things that makes everyone angry. He says other stuff that's so astute. But here's the thing. He's compelling. Like Kendrick Perkins talks, I'm listening.
Last night, he bails on trying to say Alperen Sengun. They're talking about big men that are still available. This is a guy that was projected to be a lottery pick. He's still on the board there, I think at like number 16 for Houston or something. And he just doesn't see it. And they say, well, why didn't you mention the Turkish kid? He's like, I didn't want to mess up his name. And I thought, like, that's peak O-Dog right there. Like, you're on the NBA draft and you don't want to say the name of a potential lottery pick.
Bob, that's also peak me. I respect the hell out of that. Do you know the conversations I haven't brought up because, you know, I didn't talk about Giannis Antetokounmpo for 2 years. I'm like, nope, not mentioning it until I can say it right.
Ndamukong Suh was always a tough one. You eventually got it, but it was Nautikum Suh for a long time.
Ew.
What were some of your greatest hits?
Oh, Nautikum Suh is right up there. Edwin Encarnacion, that was a tough one. That was a tricky one. That was a tough one. Is.
You didn't really get it right.
close enough. But the worst one ever, and I think, I don't know if it was you or by this point it was me and Wheeler, we had Bomani Jones on.
Oh.
And, yep, I always was referring to him as Bahamani. I couldn't say Bomani. I kept saying Bahamani. So he joins us, and I'm feeling cocky. So we get it. The thing is, it became a running thing throughout the show. Was would Matt screw up his name? And I'm like, hey, we come up. Hi, welcome back. TSN Radio, blah, blah, blah. And our next guest, I know you all think I'm going to screw it up. I'm not. He's one of the best in the business. I love the way this man thinks. Joining us now is Bahamani. 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 And then I think I just said, Wheeler, you take over. I'm done.
How did he react? Not Wheeler, but Bomani Jones.
I think he professionally moved on as quickly as one should.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
yeah.
You were like the kid at a dinner party who's like irritating everybody and the grown-ups in the room are trying to pretend he's not there.
Yeah.
That's so good, Matt. Good for you. By the way, that's another thing, and this might be a little bit of a stretch, but the Jalen Suggs didn't want to come to Toronto conspiracy theory.
Mm-hmm.
When Kendrick Perkins doesn't want to say a draft prospect's name because it's foreign and too weird, that's why NBA players don't want to come to Canada, because they don't want to deal with anything they don't get.
Yep. The Custom.
My first thought was Scotty Barnes. I wonder if he's thinking about how he doesn't want to have to do Nexus.
It's so easy. It takes 20 minutes. I got my Nexus card. You get to fly through.
These guys are such babies. Anyway, the point is, if Scotty Barnes wants to be here and wants to be the best, and Jalen Suggs didn't, if, they did the right thing.
Yep.
Do you want to talk more? We've talked about half an hour basketball. We got a lot of Leaf stuff to cover. Do you want to just quickly go over Westbrook to LA? Because you must hate this.
Oh, well, real quick about Russell Westbrook being traded to the Lakers. I love how everyone says this is a blockbuster deal. These are blockbuster names. The Lakers is a blockbuster name. LeBron, blockbuster name. Russell Westbrook, blockbuster name. This is not a blockbuster deal because unless the only way this deal is good for the Lakers, because they gave up a lot, the only way this is a good deal is if Russell takes less than 10 shots a game. If he takes like 8 shots a game, that's the only way I see this working.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking, I wrote in my notes, can you do a Carmelo? Can you do a Carmelo in Portland where you turn around and say, I'm still good, but I don't need to be the guy?
Yeah.
I don't think he can, because Carmelo had been shamed by that point and was lucky to get back into the league. And I don't think Westbrook has been shamed. I think he still mm-hmm. feels he hasn't found the right fit after 15 years.
Yes. By the way, Westbrook, he had a great stretch, final 6 weeks with Washington, helped get him to the playoffs. And 2 years ago, when Clint Capella got hurt, he had a great like 5 weeks where he had the best shooting of his entire career for a five-week stretch. But when the Lakers are fully healthy, it's LeBron and Anthony Davis show. I don't know what's Westbrook going to be? Now, he can be an initiator, but what are you going to do? Have him like, you can't have him as a shooter. So, and like teams can just drop off of him. Like, maybe it works, but to call it a blockbuster deal, I'm like, let's slow down a little bit. Don't get blinded just by the stats
and the names. And it's such a great point. Can you think of anybody other than Westbrook in sports today who is more talented and still not somebody you would want on your team? Like, is he the gold standard for, yes, he's good, but we don't want him?
Off the top of my head, it's hard to think of someone else.
Me
you know,
too.
I was trying to think of quarterbacks that put up nice numbers on bad teams or things like that. But it's like Russell Westbrook is in his own tier of someone you admire because they go 100% every time, and incredible competitive streak. And you see all the assists and go, oh, all the assists. He's wanting to help his teammates. And, oh, look at all the rebounds. But he's been traded like 3 times, like the last 3 years. If you're that great, why is every team wanting to get rid of you after 1 year?
This is the danger in my mind of the Mamba mentality. Russell Westbrook loved Kobe. Lots of guys love Kobe. And Kobe is the ultimate, even maybe more so than Michael, the ultimate product of willpower. He won 5 titles because he's just that good. Like, he's a top 6 to 10 player in the NBA history all time. Maybe in order to have Mamba mentality, you actually have to be literally that good, because what it does is it sort of starves off everybody else on your team. You actually have to be good enough to be a one-man team. And Russell Westbrook, as great as he is, like, nobody can be Mamba mentality because there's only one Mamba.
Yeah.
I wonder about that sometimes. This whole idea of, you know, you got to be the guy, you got to be the guy. Well, you know, that's great up to a point. You know, even Michael realized that being the guy meant making Scottie almost as good as him.
Kyle Lowry would have been better fit for the Lakers than Russell Westbrook.
So true. And it looks like New Orleans is where he's going to wind up. And I'd actually be happy if he did go there and got really paid, because I'd love to see what him and Zion could do. Like, as a fan of the Raptors, I don't want him gone. But as a fan of the league, somebody who can hit activate on Zion Williams is going to be really fun.
Mm-hmm.
So selfishly, I'd love for him to go to New Orleans. More so, and you know what? It means he's not in Philly, and it means he's not in Miami, and it means he's not in our conference.
It's win-win in so many ways. You're absolutely right. Speaking of winning, the opposite.
I think I know where you're going with this.
Can you make an argument that the Maple Leafs can finish in the top three in the Atlantic?
Sure. I can make that argument. If Jack Campbell and Peter Mrazek turn out to be a really dynamic goaltending duo, and the goaltending is hot all year long, or substantially above average, and they have decent health. The defense is still good.
Yep.
They still have 4 guys who can light it up. And if the goaltending is good, because let's not forget there were lots of nights where Freddie Anderson let them down, it's going to be harder. I don't think they can win the Atlantic, but I think that they can make the top three. If they can make the top three, basically, if everybody plays really well.
Yep. No, you're right.
And stay reasonably healthy.
Yep.
Now, you follow up, and then I'll throw my caveat to that.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. That is the way to do it, and that could absolutely happen. In 2019, Boston and Tampa were way, way, way ahead of Toronto. Toronto's third. The Panthers were 3 points back of the Maple Leafs in 2019. Last year, the Panthers had the 4th best record in the entire NHL, and they got better. And Tampa didn't take that much of a step back. Boston is, you know, they got Hall and they got Foligno, and they helped their goaltending. Like, I have a hard time looking at this Leafs team. And I mean, obviously they can get in the top three, but if I'm betting now, I'm saying they're fourth and they're fighting for a wild card.
I think they're fourth and they're fighting for a wild card too. I think they have enough talent and probably enough fear at this point that I could see them pulling that together. The irony of all of this gamble that Dubas has taken is that when they get to the playoffs, the lessons will take and they'll be good. That's the gamble, that we're going to see a Leafs that are better able to win for whatever reason than they have been in the past. There's no guarantee they're going to make the playoffs. I don't think anyone can argue that they're a better team on paper right now than they were going into last season. And that's scary, because everybody else is going to get better and they're going to have a tougher schedule now.
Mm-hmm.
I could see a scenario where they squeak in and then they play a really good team and we're all on pins and needles and they lose in the first round. And Dubas gets fired. Like, if I had to say what scenario would I most vote for if I was given like a drop down menu of options, I would say they squeak into the playoffs, lose in the first round, Dubas is fired. That's where I would put the money.
Can I go full Bob Mackowitz on Bob Mackowitz for a moment?
Please.
Kyle Dubas reminds me of near the end of King Lear, where he says, it's not that I, and I'm going to screw up the quote, so I apologize, but the gist was, the problem was not that I loved, the problem is that I loved unwisely. And that kind of feels a little bit with Dubas right now, and his core four, which not all his fault. No one knew about COVID. But then you see Braden Point signing for under $10 million. You see Colorado, their top three, and in Kale McCarr, none of them are hitting $10 million. And it just, it looks worse and worse with every day.
Okay, you want to hear something? By the way, that was outstanding.
Thank you.
So without even rehearsing this, you ready? I'm going to throw in my own quote.
Do it.
Which would be from Macbeth.
Mm-hmm.
I am in blood steeped so far that should I stop, were as tedious as go over. Sorry, tedious as go over. Basically, Macbeth at that moment where in the midpoint of the play, he says, I am so deep in the shit that I might as well go all the way with it because it would be just as hard to go backwards.
Yeah.
So he continues to kill. I like yours better, but yes, Dubas is shaping up to have a very Shakespearean season, and that's not good.
It really isn't. Yeah. And by the way, see, Bob, we didn't need to go to fancy schools. We still sound like fancy school lads.
Yeah, I went to a fancy school.
I did not, but that's okay.
McMaster is a really good school.
It is. But that's like, if you're at McMaster and you're there for like medicine, then it's, ooh. If you went to McMaster for theater and history, and by the way, I had great teachers. I loved every moment of it. It doesn't have the same panache.
Yeah, I went to U of T, which sounds so much better than it really is. It is so true. I think they're fucked, Matt. I think they're fucked. And I think what we saw was Dubas. The gamble is simply that his guys can get better. In the regular season, I don't see how that's possible. You know, how much better can Marner and Matthews really play in the regular season? How much better do we expect the defense to be next year? Your older guys are a year older. I guess Riley might have a better year, but like that's kind of, he didn't play bad and we kind of know who he is. I don't really see the logic behind saying like who's going to get so much fucking better that all of a sudden they're kicking everyone's butt in. It's all about the playoffs. And I think the idea is that these guys are so good and they just haven't found their gear in the playoffs. And I don't think we've seen any evidence for that either.
We haven't.
So I think they're fucked. And I think Dubas is going to get fired. Like, I hope it doesn't go that way, but I think that's the odds on favorite thing to happen.
And God, what a difference like 6 months make. And I'll keep going over and over again that COVID put a huge dent in the plans because the timing of it. Everyone has got these new deals. They assume the cap will keep going up. Here comes Seattle when Vegas came to town. That led to a bump. And then COVID came and it it's done for people on far higher tragic levels. It's screwing up their plan. But then on top of that, how, if you are the Leafs, how do you compete with Tampa? Like, seriously, how do you compete with, because Tampa's a smart team, but none of their guys, all their top players make more than $1 million less than Mitch Marner, than $2 million less than Austin Matthews. And the difference is their stars score lots of points in the playoffs. The Raptor or the Leafs top players score lots of points in the regular season and they don't in the playoffs. So I don't know how you compete with that.
I watched Boston sign Taylor Hall to a $6 million 4-year deal. And I thought, let's go back to trade deadline. Nick Foligno signs with the Leafs. They give up a first rounder to get him. He adds nothing to the team and he's gone. Yep. Where's he go? Oh, ironically to Boston. So not only did they get Taylor Hall, who, you know, was an option for a very low price, but Boston winds up with both these guys and the Leafs wind up with nobody. I like Dubas a lot, but he kind of fucking played himself into a corner, not because there aren't ways forward, but because he refuses to take them. Zach Werenski just signed a deal for like $9.5 million with the Columbus Blue Jackets. What's Morgan Riley's price going to be at the end of this year? How many times do we have to go down this road where they're like, we're just going to see what happens with these players? And at the end of it, what happens is not team friendly. It happened with Nylander. It happened with Marner. It happened with Hyman. It's about to happen with Riley again. If Dubas has one great flaw, it's not strategic. It's the fact that as a kind of a negotiator and figuring out when the iron's hot, he doesn't seem to have a good instinct for when he should ship a guy and when he should sign a guy.
By the start of training camp, Morgan Riley has got to have a Tampa Bay Lightning-esque cap-friendly long-term extension with Toronto, or he's got to be traded for picks and prospects. It's as simple as that.
here's the funny thing, Matt. Like, I like Morgan Riley, but I think they I think they should trade him. And I thought they should have traded him last year because they would have gotten even more for him. And I still think there's still a chance to get stuff for him. Because even if they signed this deal, this team-friendly deal, it's still going to be a chunk of change. And he's only going to get worse from this point. I don't think the Leafs are going to win this year. I don't think they're going to win next year. I've said this on the pod. I think their real window is 2 to 4, you know, 2 to 3 years away. Like, hopefully by the very last year of Austin Matthews' contract, they're in a good position to do it. How good is Riley going to be at that point in 2024? It's not that he loves. It's that he loves unwisely, Matt. Yep. A wise man named Cause once wrote.
Yeah, okay. If anyone tells you some dude named Bill or William wrote it, they're a stone-cold liar. Mm-hmm. You know the way out for the Leafs?
Hmm.
Draft. That's some of these picks in the last couple of years that we haven't heard of, that whoever they are, they've got to draft their point in Kucherov. They got to get their guys that were taken, and so far hasn't happened. So far, if you look at everyone taken, there's not a lot of big names coming out there. They got to hope that someone they've got can hit and develop and become the next Kucherov, the next point, the next whoever, where it's a, you know, later than second round pick who can become a top six forward, who can become a top four defenseman, and that's it. Because what they have now, it's not they don't have talent. They've got a lot of great talent, but they don't have enough depth. And they don't have the cap flexibility that Tampa, that Boston, that Florida have right now. And it's not that those teams won't eventually get in trouble, but I keep going back to Boston, or excuse me, Tampa, and I'll keep going back to that Braden Point deal. That Braden Point deal means that they will always have a certain level of flexibility because you got a true star and you got them under $10 million, and it's such an incredible weapon.
Fuck the Marner, like the nightmare that is the Marner point comparison just never stops giving.
Nope, it doesn't.
It's just, like, seriously, Marner is going to have to fucking build a hospital in this city in order to get out from under the image of that deal, because he was so insolent about it, too. Holding out, you know, I want to be, like, up there with Matthews, blah, blah, blah. And he's shit in the playoffs. And until he reverses that completely, you know, maybe if the cap had gone up, it wouldn't look so bad right now. But even just with the comparables around the league, like, he's so head and shoulders. Like, it's not a bad deal in the sense that you overpaid to get a good player.
Yeah, he's an excellent player in the regular season.
He's an excellent regular season player. And you're gambling on talent. I still think there's value to that. But there's just no two ways around it. They overpaid for him. And if you're going to play this game, maybe people are like, oh, you know, you can't win with a core four, you know, giving most of your money over to four. I go back to this. Maybe it's not that you can't do it. It's the way they did it that's wrong. They spent too much on Tavares, which jacked up the price on Marner. Or did Marner sign first? I'm trying to remember now. Anyway.
There's Matthews then.
Yeah. But he's older. But he's older, so now he's kind of on the way down, I think. They did a good job with Nylander, which is so ironic because the deal that everybody hated the most was Nylander's. And a few years later, it's proven to be the best one. That's so bizarre.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was just because after, like, he held out to the last moment, and after they signed him, he was horrible. Like, he was horrible that first year back. And listen, he's had plenty of bad playoff series, but he was great against Montreal, you know. And here's the thing. If Matthews and Marner, if those guys had embraced their inner Tampa Bay Lightning, Hyman could still be here. They would, if they wanted to. Now, maybe the Leafs didn't want him anyway because of the term, but they would have had the money to have been able to have kept Zach Hyman.
And if that's what they wanted, they could have done it. The fact that they didn't really want to do that, I'm okay with, because those players tend to get overvalued, just as Edmonton overvalued Zach Hyman. I forgot to mention one thing. Yeah. You said, what are the odds of them making the playoffs? And I mentioned goaltending and health. Fix the power play. Put Marner behind the net and just let Nylander become your second shooting option. the guy's got a laser, mm-hmm. and Marner doesn't have a very good shot. So let's not fucking set it up for Marner to be your secondary option. Let him be a facilitator. Let Nylander, who's got a bloody cannon for a wrist shot and an amazing release, let him be. And then let just as Washington did back in the day, you know, where you have your Ovi, but you've also got your TJ Oshie. Like, let the goalie and the defense go crazy because there are two great shooters out there they have to keep their eyes on. So that's the other thing. Yep. They can fix the power play. And gotta hope that the rumor that Marner is a suck about it is just not true. Because if he's going to stand in the way of that, then really this is like another gots to go scenario. Hopefully it's not true, though.
Basically, for the Leafs to get into the top three in the Atlantic, everyone's got to play well, everyone's got to be healthy, and they got to fix the power play. Bada-bing, bada-bang, there we go.
In other words, everything just has to be better.
Yeah, everything just has to be better.
You know, this is my fear, and this is how the fan is trained to think, right? It's spring training thinking. You look ahead and you say, if all of these things happen, we could really do this. And as we know in life, all of these things never happen. It never goes that way. It's who can get around the shit that goes wrong. That's who wins. People get hurt.
Yep.
People have worse years than they did last year. You know, other teams are better than you thought they would be. Like, there's just, like, it's not how good you can be. It's how good you can be when shit goes wrong.
Mm-hmm. That's a perfect way to put it. I think William Shakespeare wrote the same thing in Henry IV.
Henry, falling broke. It's not how good you can be. I normally don't do the acting thing good, but I felt like I did Henry pretty good.
That was not bad. That wasn't bad. You're horrible at impersonations, but that was pretty good.
So bad. I actually had my hand outstretched like Kenneth Branagh.
Of course. By the way, thank you for saying Kenneth. Sorry, Sir Laurence Olivier. Kenneth Branagh, the best Hamlet ever. There. Boom. Hot take. What are you going to do with that, motherfuckers?
And that's my master's theater department talking.
Yeah, exactly.
Trained in Hamilton to have a hot take like that.
Exactly. The steel fire. You get the analogy.
Hey, how long do we have, buddy? Because we should talk about something big that happened, not to us, but around us.
Yeah, we got about like 6-7 minutes. Yeah. Michael Landsberg is moving on. He is no longer with TSN after 37 years. This is 1984. And yeah, Michael is going to be doing more stuff with Sick Not Weak, going to be doing like animated series, going to be working with some really cool comedians and just doing different things. But how weird is it, the idea of TSN without Michael Landsberg?
Almost like ESPN without Chris Berman.
Yeah.
There are some personalities that have just been there so long that they're like, he's in the first tree ring. Like, he's an original day one guy. He's ring number one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Landsberg is, and I say, like, this is my opinion, and he's my dear friend, so it may cloud my judgment, but I think he's as talented a broadcaster as this country ever produced. And the only difference between him and, like, a Jim Rome or a Skip Bayless or any of these guys who, like, go on to make tens of millions of dollars in their career and have, like, the American media at their feet is he's a good family guy. And he really just liked doing the job. And for all the people that thought he had a massive ego, the irony is I never met anybody who cared less about the trappings of fame than Landsberg. Like, he was the most regular, the most regular down-to-earth guy I have ever, ever worked with. In fact, he avoided the trappings of fame because he thought they were boring. And he just liked hanging out with his family, eating chicken wings, watching sports, and making himself available to help others. Like, literally just all of that talent and all of that character almost never go together. And so for myself personally, like, that guy changed my life and probably saved it a few times. So, you know, I'm glad he's done because he gets to leave while the sports industry is still in the industry. He made a smart decision.
I let's stick on that trappings of fame thing, because you're so right. He could have gone down to the States. He could have been a bigger star, could have made more money, but like, almost every day at Off the Record, he was talking to his wife like twice a day. When his daughter, when Casey would have a good appointment after going to the eye doctor, Michael would always buy everyone in the crew pizza to celebrate. He doesn't have a fleet of fancy cars. He's been in the same house. It's a nice house, but he's been in the same house for eight. His idea of vacations isn't the Amalfi Coast. It's either Germany because of his love of history, or he's in Florida sitting on his in-laws' couch watching CNN fretting about Donald Trump. Like,
that's exactly right.
Like, this is a guy who never complained. They all think about all the offices we had it off the record. He shared an office with us. Like, his desk would be crammed next to yours. He would be in the corner of a tiny office at like Sky Dome. I remember one day he's eating, you know, porridge and just the dry part of the porridge mixed with applesauce. And he's mixing the two things together with a plastic knife. He doesn't even have a fork or a spoon and he's shoving it in his mouth. Like, that's glamour boy, TV boy Landsberg. Like, there was none of those ego trappings.
And so many track pants. Just like a bottomless drawer of track pants.
So true.
You know, he was such, like, you know, you and I both started our careers working with Michael. And he was so, and is still to this day, like, but he was so good to me. And taught me so much about not just how the industry works, but how life works. And here's the thing, and I'm going to use this to, I'm not going to hammer TSN because I actually think TSN did a good job. You know, Keith Pelley elevated him. He got to do the Olympics on prime time. Like, there were a lot of things there, right? But what it really goes to show, and I think in some ways, his skill set would be, like, if he was starting today, it would be so much more valuable because back in the day, the best thing you could be is unobtrusive. They didn't want their hosts to have personality. One, I think they figured they'd have to pay them more. But two, it was all about just get out of the way of the game. Don't have a personality. Don't make trouble. Don't do anything. And he was always a smart, opinionated guy who ran towards trouble. And there were a lot of good managers who understood that. But even just the Canadian media generally, like, the whole thing was like, could you be in a Tim Hortons commercial? And he was just never that kind of guy who was going to be in a Tim Hortons commercial. But what he did do over the course of the years was I think he created some of the most interesting and forward-looking media. Like, the stuff that we were making back then with him at the helm of it fits way more into today's landscape than it did in the early 90s and early 2000s. You know, if it's almost like he was at the beginning of the wave that the Americans were just figuring out. And it took the Canadians about 20 years to get there. Where, you know, opinion and dynamic sort of presentation, that's the thing. So I give him a lot of credit. I actually think sometimes, you know, people are born with a skill set that's wrong for their era or wrong for their place. If he'd been born American, he would have been one of the biggest stars. Or even if he decided to go there, would have been one of the biggest stars in the sports world. But what he really did, and I think what we should all be proud about, you and me, him for working on it and all the other guys too, was creating a show that was actually ahead of its time. You know, good or bad, it was definitely ahead of its time. And, you know, I think that really speaks well to Michael because he always had a lot of imagination and intelligence, and he never just wanted to do what everybody else was doing. In fact, that was kind of a good place for him to go the opposite. You know, God bless him. Like, it's not a lot of hosts that I would describe as creative, and he's definitely one of them.
Perfect way to end this, Bob.
Yeah, yeah, geez, I love that guy, man. And he's a good cook, love him too.
Yeah.
You know, he's good with the barbecue.
Yeah, no.
So, what's up for you? Are you still doing game day? Or are you going to do mornings? What's the deal?
Next week, I'm doing mostly first up. And you know me, Bob, I'm a leaf in the river, my man. I just, you know, wherever I am is where I am. And it's all fun, whether I'm waking up at 5:10 in the morning or I'm working 1 to 4 or 2 to 4. And also, it's the summer. Everyone's on vacation but me. So, I'm going to be all over the place still yammering about what's going on.
Matt, I hope whatever it is that makes you happy is what happens because you just finally deserve a break.
Goodbye, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.